Welcome to the Seahawkers podcast, episode 284. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
I'm stoked to be joining you today, Brandon, on this beautiful sunny day here in Montana. It was an interesting day yesterday for the Seahawks.
Tuesday, we found out that the Seahawks are bringing in tight end Greg Olsen from the Carolina Panthers. A lot of bad memories as a Seahawks fan of Greg Olsen dominating us in whether it's playoff games or regular season games that are impactful. Mm-hmm. And now he's going to be on the Seahawks. And, you know, Adam, this is my favorite time of year because we can react to some ridiculous headlines. We can talk about Russell Wilson's mm-hmm. hair. And wonder, you know, just how guys like Greg Olsen are going to impact the Seahawks next year.
Exactly. I'm glad that you already got Russell Wilson's hair out of the way because it's been a roller coaster. But, you know, I mean, he's doing his thing. That's fine. It's the offseason. Go ahead and experiment. The Greg Olsen sighting is very fascinating to me on a number of different levels. This could go all sorts of different ways. And I think it's the beginning of an offseason that is going to be one that really defines the second act of Pete Carroll and John Schneider as a combo. And I think this is the first of those moves. And I find it absolutely fascinating.
Fascinating is a good description for it because, you know, just a couple weeks ago, Russell Wilson was commenting on how the team needed more superstars. And now the Seahawks go and signed superstar tight end Greg Olsen.
Well, okay. Now, when the news came out yesterday and we texted back and forth,
yeah,
I think my excitement level on a scale of 1 to 10 was a negative 60, somewhere in there. Because, yeah, you look at it on the surface and you go, okay, great. Here's Greg Olsen, somebody who used to be good. This feels so much like Ziggy Ansah, you know, just some old guy that can't play anymore, even though Ziggy wasn't that old. His body was. And this isn't going to move the needle at all. And this is $5 million wasted. Like that, that's how I felt in 30 seconds, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of people did too. I don't know. Maybe you felt differently right
after. Well, I was never that excited about, you know, when the idea was floated, because we've known for a long time that Greg Olsen was planning these visits. He was visiting Washington. He was visiting Buffalo. And he came to Seattle. And the interesting thing about those three teams is that he has connections to Washington, obviously, with his former coach, mm-hmm. now coaching the Skins. McDermott was a coach down in Carolina, right? And now coaching for Buffalo. So he has some kind of connection there. And the difference was Seattle. There really wasn't any kind of connection. So to me, it's a little bit concerning when a guy, especially who's 35, doesn't really have much market beyond guys that he knows. I felt like the Seahawks with this contract, you know, $5.5 million guaranteed, $7 million total. It feels to me like they're competing with what Greg Olsen would make outside of the NFL on a TV deal working for a network.
Yeah, that's probably true because he does have those options when he does retire. He's been like a guest, I don't know, what would you call it? Commentator host on some shows. Like they'll bring him in for a quarter or whatever. We've seen that a couple times during broadcasts and has some talent.
He's been doing XFL.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
It has some talent for it. And I think that's where he's going when he retires. So yeah, as far as the money goes, you're probably right. It is competing against those TV deals in a sense. Now, one way to look at this too, is that, you know, $5.5 million guaranteed. Okay. I was like, you know, for a 1 year guy, a little bit older, I don't know. I mean, that's a little bit of money. It's not a lot of money, but you know, it's some, it's significant. And then I got to thinking about it and like Ed Dixon is going to be off this team and he's $3 million right there. This could be a net $2 million difference to go from the lesser of the two former Carolina tight ends to the better of the two Carolina tight ends. And yeah, you do look at it on the surface. You go, he's 35 years old. The last 3 years, the previous two, he hurt the same foot twice, but this last year he played 14 games.
Yeah.
That's a lot more games than Will Disley and he's young, right?
Right.
And with that said, he also played with two quarterbacks that I think came out of like Pop Warner football last year to play. I mean, whether it was Kyle Allen or Will Greer,
right?
They both suck ass. Like, let's be clear, and still put up
Why are you being so generous about their quarterback play?
You're right. I'm sorry. But he still managed to produce, you know, in a season of turmoil for the Panthers, 50 plus catches for the year. And that's one of the better tight end years that a tight end has ever had for the Seahawks.
Right.
If you got in that range. So you look at that and you go, well, okay, maybe he does have one more year in the tank. It is a risk, but I understand where it's coming from. This does make sense on some level.
And I can get behind that, too, because that is what it came down to it for me, too. Would I rather have Greg Olsen on the team or would I rather have Ed Dixon? And what this does, it's not just the idea of bringing on a veteran tight end, but I think it helps the Seahawks kick the can down the road a little bit with regard to Will Dissly to kind of see how he's going to recover from injury. Can he put together and feel like he's on the mend, and that these were maybe just fluky injuries that were to start his career, or is he going to be an injury prone guy? And what it does for the team is now going into free agency, you're not necessarily going to have to pay at the top of the market. Now, one of the things that I look at is right now in terms of the tight end market, Jimmy Graham's at the top of the tight end market. Mm-hmm. And every one of the free agents wants to reset the market. And I think we're going to talk about that with Jadeveon Clowney coming up. But that's what every guy wants to do. They want to become the highest paid guy. And to me, I think Austin Hooper is probably going to be that guy for the Falcons because he's relatively young. He's right. been productive and he doesn't have kind of that injury history like a guy like the Chargers tight end.
Right.
And so would you rather have, you know, go on the top end of the Greg Olsen contract, $7 million, or would you rather have a long-term option, not really knowing about Will Dissly and maybe overpaying for a guy like Austin Hooper because you have to pay him at the top of the market because he's going to be the most coveted tight end likely in free agency?
Okay. So when I'm looking at constructing a football team, one of the things that we've seen John Schneider do very well in our first title run was find market inefficiencies. And he did that along the defensive line, whether that was Cliff Averill or Michael Bennett, right? Or name the interior defensive lineman. And he was able to get high quality players at a much more discounted rate. Tight end isn't that position to me. Like, people overpay for tight ends all the time. And while they can be a big game changer, I don't think for that cost it makes sense, because many of the ones that are big time receivers can't block worth a piss.
Right.
Now, you can have guys that do both. I mean, Kittle's one of those guys. Kelsey's one of those guys. I mean, they're few and far between. Greg Olsen is actually one of those guys.
Yeah.
Will Dissly is one of those guys. Now, you look at the offense going forward with this signing, I think it speaks to the Seahawks thinking a little bit on what they're going to do this offseason. Because think about the idea that healthy Will and Greg Olsen, you can run a lot of two tight end formations. And what's the best way to protect, say, a brand new right tackle?
Sure.
Have an extra tight end to help him block. And also, too, it plays right into the way the Seahawks like to play. You can run out of that formation. You can throw out of it. Now, you can throw more when you got somebody like Greg Olsen and Will Dissly out there. They're both legit receiving threats. And so you combine that with, you know, whether it's Penny or Carson back there in the backfield and the threat to run and the play action. On the high end of this signing, on the extreme high end, we could see articles around week 13 that have headlines that sound a bit like this. Greg Olsen, the player that unlocked the Seahawks offense. It could be a very much similar thing to the way Kittle does things for the Niners, or even Juszczyk, right?
Yeah.
Those guys that are just kind of weird mismatches that go out there and you don't really know where the team's going because you can do anything with them on the field. And that's the versatility this brings. And then you throw into the mix Jacob Hollister with his pass catching prowess, and you put the three of them together. Now you could run some even three tight end sets a lot like the Ravens do.
Yeah.
That confused the hell out of the league last year.
Right.
So, and then you combine all that with Lockett and Metcalf on the outside, who are legit edge threats. And you start looking at the offense and you go, oh my God, like we could be one of the top offenses in the league. And I think the signing of Greg Olsen can help protect them against another Will injury, can help protect them against getting rid of Effetti and bringing somebody else who may end up being a downgrade, which would be the scariest thing in the world. But, you know, protecting against that, helping protect that offensive line if Justin Britt is let go. There's a lot of things that signing Greg Olsen can help with for a year.
Right. And by doing it now, before free agency even starts, it kind of gives the team a jump start ahead of having to wait and see if, you know, because you know, there's all kinds of other teams that are going to be looking for guys like Austin Hooper or the Chargers' Hunter Henry. Gosh, you know, there's a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy through his first couple of years in the league and a lot of talent there. But I feel like, yeah, Greg Olsen's had a couple injured years, but compare that to Hunter Henry, who at the start of his career has had the struggles. So, you know, there's going to be risks either way. And this kind of, I feel like it jumpstarts the offseason more of than waiting around and trying to be involved in multiple different pots of, you know, are we going to address the offensive line with a big name free agent? Are we going to try and, you know, be in the bidding war with Clowney when that starts up? And are we going to have to try and also focus on getting a tight end at the top of the market too? You know, there's just a lot of things to try and do in the first couple of days of free agency. And this takes out one of the offseason priorities, I feel like.
It does. And you kind of brought up a good point about, all right, it takes a little pressure off trying to figure out, you know, where you go in as far as free agency in the draft. And that's why I think this offseason is fascinating, because all the really great quarterbacks in the league generally have two title runs in them, mm-hmm. right? And we saw Russell Wilson's first one, and it looked very much like every other great quarterback's first title run. You have a great defense that they come into. They play conservative on offense for the most part, have a good running game, and they make those few special plays because they're a great player earlier in their career to put you over the top.
Yeah.
And that's how that team won. And now we've seen rebuilding for the last 2 years. In this last season, I think we can all legitimately say that when this team was healthy, it was an absolute Super Bowl contender. It was this last year.
Yeah, they were 10-2 through the first 12 games.
Absolutely. So when I'm looking at this offseason, they feel much more like just a couple pieces away from winning a title than, say, 2 years ago when the LOB's all gone, we're in these years of transition, and you're trying to figure it out. I think these next 2 to 3 years are absolutely critical, because this is the beginning of the second title run for Russell Wilson. This is the time in his career. He's 31 years old. That takes us to where he's about 34. And Bobby Wagner's not getting any younger. KJ Wright's not getting any younger. You know, our safeties aren't getting any younger. I mean, it's just, you go down the roster and it's time. You competed last year. Now's the time to put it all together and hope you have that magical season where guys stay healthy. So the question becomes, how did John and Pete decide to attack this second title window? Is it go all in with Russ on the offensive side? How do you help Russell Wilson the most? Do you go in and just get a bunch of dudes, even if they're one-year deals like Greg Olsen, and splurge on the offense and try to outscore people? Or do you look at it and say, okay, we were 9th in points per game last year on offense, and we were 22nd on defense, and so you splurge on defense to try to bring the defense up to match Russell's play, to take a little of the pressure off, so maybe he's not having to do all those fourth quarter magic things. What do they do? And it really is, there's no real right or wrong answer.
Pick one, right?
Yeah, you just have to pick one. And so it's going to be fascinating to see what happens here over the next couple months, because you look at the free agency market in the terms of defensive linemen, there's a lot of dudes out there. There's a lot of dudes that could play, that could really help. Not to mention Clowney to start with. Like, that's going to be the first big domino.
It is. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Clowney. And I was intrigued by an article that came out this week that's, well, you know, it seemed like most of the articles were built around the graphic that Bleacher Report posted on Twitter, but it did go back. I was able to track down the source of this finally, but the graphic says that Clowney wants, and it puts in quotes, a market-setting contract. And that was on the quote, and the report was attributed to Matt Miller of Bleacher Report. It took me forever to try and track down this article, Adam, because I was curious if this quote unquote market setting contract, if this was said by Clowney, if it was said by an agent, where did this source come from that was explaining this? Because the last time we heard from Jadeveon Clowney directly was after the Packers game, and it sounded like he was definitely open to the idea of staying in Seattle. He talked about wanting to play for a contender. And this report from Bleacher Report, here's what it says. It says, many around the league believe the Seahawks want Clowney back, but is the feeling mutual? Sources around the league think Clowney will look to cash in with a market-setting contract, something the Seahawks aren't poised to offer. The prediction, Clowney goes to Miami, where the Dolphins lead the league in available cap space, or to Indianapolis, where general manager Chris Ballard has the second most cap space and a big need to win in an AFC South that's suddenly very tough. And that's where all this is coming from. That's where the quote market setting contract comes from. It's not a direct quote in the article. It's just that sources around the league think that he's going to get a market setting contract, and he probably will, but just the idea of brushing aside the Seahawks being in on this is strange to me.
Yeah, when you started reading the article there and the idea that he's looking for, quote, a market-setting contract, the first word that came to my mind was, duh. Right. Of course he is. Of course he is. That's what these players do. And especially if you're a generational talent like Clowney is, that's what you do.
My biggest problem with it, though, was when I see the words market setting contract, players don't talk that way. And it seemed like there were so many articles out there attributing it to Jadeveon Clowney says he wants a market setting contract.
Right.
No, Clowney did not say that outright. Now, I understand that he wants it, but that's not how players talk. You never see a player. That's something that agents say. That's something that writers write. No player ever says, oh, yeah, I want to get a market setting contract.
No, he says something more like, I want to get my chicken.
Right. So, I want the bag. I want to be paid what my value,
or, you know,
I want to feel valued.
Yeah. I want respect.
Respect.
So, yeah,
yes.
Those are the things that you hear, of course. Now, let's break down the reasons that he thought that the Seahawks wouldn't retain Clowney, right? Number one, he says that he wants a market setting deal and the Seahawks are not poised to do that. Was that the word chosen
there? That was the word that was chosen there.
We got a crap ton of cap space. How are we not poised to do that?
Right.
Like, number one, okay? Yeah. So that right there blows that out of the water. Second thing he brings up is, I think he'll be in Miami or Indy. Let's take Miami first. Oh, you mean the team that the Texans were going to try to trade him to last year? And he threw a freaking fit and said, no way, no how?
Yeah, his mind's going to change.
Yeah, you mean this is the guy in Clowney who was talking all about how he wants to be on a contender? He's going to go take the bag in Miami at that team? I don't think so. That's not happening, number one. So, like, let's push that out of the way. Okay, and then you look at the Colts. You know, a lot of people look at the Colts as a contender. And I think they're one of the more overrated teams in the NFL right now. People talk about all the talent on that team. Really? They got good offensive line.
Yeah.
Who else? T.Y. Hilton, who almost is healthy sometimes? And what? Jacoby Brissett's not going to light the league on fire ever. It's just not going to happen. He's a great mediocre quarterback. Fantastic for them.
They got some nice pieces on defense.
They're all right. I mean, I don't look at that Colts team and just see it just teeming with up-and-coming stars. I just don't. If you're Clowney, why in the world would you want to go and play with Brissett and company in the AFC South when you just, you know, had a great season with Russell Wilson? That's the reason why Greg Olsen is here, because of Russell Wilson. These players are going to want to come here because of our quarterback, because this is an actual contender. So out of all the options that this article brought up, the only one that makes sense is the Seahawks, the ones with the cap space and are a legit contender. And on top of that, he knows he fits in the locker room. Dudes love him here. That's a stupid article.
Plus, I think that the Seahawks, they could get a little break not only by the fact that they are a contender, they have Russell Wilson, but we talk about this nearly every offseason, the fact that Washington State is a place where players don't have to pay income tax. And that makes a difference. I mean, Texas is one of those states that's not, I mean, he's not going to the Cowboys, he's not going back to the Texans. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's not very many states where you pay 0% income tax. Florida's one of them. We just talked about why he's not going to Miami. I would doubt he would go to Jacksonville, you know, and, you know, some of these states don't even have football teams. So
right.
There's a limited amount of space where Washington can be very competitive in terms of the market, where you look at it and you go, oh, this state's not going to take 5%, 10% of my check.
Yeah.
Okay. I think maybe I'll stay here.
It's a little bit of a bonus at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't have to pay that extra tax, especially when you're talking about the type of money these guys bring in. So I kind of feel like, as far as Clowney coming back, I think it's more at Seattle's discretion than Clowney's, in a way. If they want him back, they've got the money to do it.
Right.
And they will. And I think they probably will. That's just my gut feel. And then you can go down the list of all the potential free agents on the defensive line. I mean, guys that have actually produced in this league that you could get on a much cheaper deal than, you know, say like, you know, a Clowney or somebody like that. I mean, you can get Gerald McCoy. You can get Mike Daniels on the interior. And I would really love him to focus on the interior of the defensive line. I think that would be a big deal. Sue's out there. I mean, he can still play, and yeah, you're not going to have to break the bank. You could get 2-3 of those guys, and maybe Robert Quinn or another dude off the edge, Brockers, Armstead. And all of a sudden, you're a lot like the Chiefs, whose defense was a dumpster fire the year previous. And then this year, they bring in Frank Clark with a shrewd trade, and then sign guys like the Honey Badger, who we all looked at and was like, he can't stay healthy. Great player, can't stay healthy. And then does this year, and then their defense makes 2 or 3 stops in the last 8 minutes of the Super Bowl, and now they have a chip. That's how close this team is to being the Chiefs in that regard, in improving this defense.
Yeah, and there are guys out there on the defensive line to go ahead and do it. And I feel like they're even in position that they could potentially be involved in some trades. Giving up their first round pick isn't unheard of. The fact that they have 2 picks at the end of the second round would make them involved, you know, in a potential trade. Because I look at guys like Yannick Ngakoue for the Jaguars, and a lot of people say,
I don't want him. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Sure. I can't say his name because I'm stupid.
Yeah, that's fine. You'll get used to it.
I don't need another name I struggle with, like Jadeveon. Jadeveon. Yeah, that's never going to work for me.
You struggled with it all year. You're still working on it. Now, hopefully, you get
I'm
to continue
working
saying
on
it.
I just give it up.
You just go with Clowney. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm an idiot. It's not his fault. It's a me problem. But yeah, so that's the only reason I don't want Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah,
you
can just go with Yannick, you know, his first name.
I know, but
he shortened it to Yanni, like the, you know, the,
like the terrible elevator
smooth
music
jazz
guy?
Player. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Ngakoue, I don't think that he's going to hit the open market, but what we've seen from the past.
Oh, I bet he does. Jacksonville's in salary cap hell, dude.
Oh, there's other dudes that they can release. And I think they're going to take a playbook from what they saw from the Chiefs, what they saw from the Seahawks in this past year, franchise tag him, and then try and get picks from another team. Because that's what, when you have a pass rusher who's in demand on your team, that seems like it's the way that teams negotiate now. And they say, we're not going to sign him, but, you know, you give us a second round pick or a couple second round picks, and you can be the one to negotiate with them on the contract.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, and that does make a lot of sense. You have a great point there.
We will see what happens. Maybe the Jaguars just won't take my advice, but they do have a lot of guys that they need to make a decision on, and guys that they have on the defensive line even that are team options, you know, much like Everson Griffin, how the Vikings have I think Griffin actually has the option that he can opt out. The Vikings in position that they need to dump some salary cap money. So Griffin was another guy I think that we talked about a couple weeks ago as a potential casualty on the cap. Marcel Darius is the other guy for the Jaguars who they could save $14 million by not bringing back this next year, a defensive tackle. You know, there's other guys that I'm kind of intrigued by in terms of trade too. Because what about a guy like Von Miller
he's not going nowhere.
You don't think so?
Nope.
No,
I've been talking a lot with our buddy Jared, the Broncos fan, super fan, right?
And he's totally tied in with the team and sources, right?
Well, if people think we are, then he is. Okay, I mean, if you're reading the tea leaves and you pay attention, right?
Oh yeah. And Jared is a guy who pays attention.
Right. Von Miller is one of those dudes who not only does the organization want him to be a Bronco for life, but he wants to be a Bronco for life.
Okay.
He's just one of those guys.
Yeah.
So I think
like Larry Fitzgerald, you know, every year people talk about him wanting to go somewhere, and here he is still getting his double digit millions from the Cardinals.
Yeah. Similar dude.
Thanks, Cardinals.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, a big thanks to the Cardinals for paying DJ Humphreys 2 years, $30 million, you know, potentially 3 years, 45 for a left tackle who all of a sudden didn't give up sacks because he had Kyler Murray running around behind him.
You said thank you for that. And I mean, in a way, yes, because you overpaid a crap player. But now if you're going to try to keep a Fetty, now you have to overpay.
They weren't going to try to keep a Fetty, Adam.
We don't know that. We don't know that.
Yes, we do. We got our very first clue last year when they were able to give him a $10 million fifth-year option in the offseason because he's under a first-round contract, and they declined it.
Well, true.
And now they're going to have to pay him way more than that $10 million option would have been when
because of the DJ Humphreys contract.
Yeah, because and I think people had in mind, I feel like with the Fetty, about this time last year, we were saying, well, if they could get him for $6 or $7 million, that'd be great a year. You know, that would be okay. You know, it wouldn't be the greatest, but, you know, at least he's been healthy and has the experience, somebody that can grow with. But now it's upwards of twice that amount.
Right. And look, at the end of the day, you can get a guy for $3 to $8 million, somewhere in there, right? Depending on their stature in the league. To give you a Fetty level play, it's not hard to find. That's not unbelievably unique what he does at right tackle.
No.
I mean, give me a break, right? I honestly believe you pay George Fant a little bit of money and you make him play right tackle. Everybody's like, he wants to play left tackle because I want to be a blindside guy. Well, guess what? You don't have that kind of swag in this league. You don't. You're a tight end right now. And you're going to demand where you play on the offensive line? I don't think so, buddy.
Yeah.
That's not happening. He doesn't have that kind of leverage.
He's the Taysom Hill of the left tackle group this offseason.
I guess. He's going to be the starting right tackle for the Seattle Seahawks next year, and I think it'll be an upgrade over a Fetty. Swallow your pride a little bit, George. Right now, right tackle is just as important as left tackle in this league because people move their edge rushers all over the damn place. It doesn't much matter anymore. You get paid either way.
You get paid either way. And yes, whoever pays him the most amount of money to play tackle, whether it's right or left, is where George Fant will end up. If the Seahawks are willing to pay him $8 million to come play right tackle for the Seahawks next year, and another team is offering to pay him left tackle money, below that, I think he's coming back to the Seahawks.
Right. If they're going to pay him less to play left tackle, then we'll pay him to play right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. I mean, I'm not a betting man, but, the logic follows. But I do think that his value is at its highest with our team than with any other team in the league.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that the Seahawks are going to lose out on a bidding war for George Fant. But, I mean,
maybe you do if you're going after Jack Conklin or somebody like that, right?
Would you rather pay, well...
Here's the big fascinating offseason question. Would you rather pay Clowney and then a couple dudes on the defensive line? Or would you rather pay Conklin and, you know, try to grab, you know, another offensive lineman somewhere in free agency or through the draft, high up in the draft, trade up for one of the more talented offensive linemen and go all in there? What do you do?
Or pay an aging guy like Brian Bulaga, you know, who's, you know, in his 30s.
Right.
They have a lot of different options they can go. You know, we talked about Brandon Scherff at guard if they want to upgrade from Upati or if they want to go young with Phil Haynes or Jamarco Jones at a left guard spot. So, gosh, they have so many intriguing ways to go. And we talked about Justin Britt. The more I think about it, the more I think Justin Britt could be gone because...
No, I totally disagree.
I think that they could go with a combo of Ethan Posick and Joey Hunt. If they want to spend money on the defensive line, I think that you can afford to. I see you shaking your head at me, Adam.
Yeah, all the no's.
We just talked about how this past season, they were ninth in, what was it? Ninth in
points
offense,
per game.
Points per game. Ninth in points per game. and you had Justin Britt for so little of the season.
BS, you had him from the majority of the season.
About half the season.
Okay, fine. We can agree there.
But
look, we saw right quick the difference between Justin Britt and Joey Hunt up front. Joey Hunt was a disaster against the Eagles in the playoffs.
A hurt Joey Hunt.
Fine, but he's undersized. He can't be your starting center. And when you're starting to look at, if you're starting to look at what guys are getting paid around the league, we gave Justin Britt that contract years ago, and now is when you get the highest value out of that contract. At $8 to $9 million, wherever it is that he comes in, it's somewhere right there for the next year, for a guy that you know is a leader on the offensive line that works well with Russell Wilson, that's easy money. That's easy money.
Coming off an ACL injury.
Yeah, ACL injuries might as well be dislocated pinkies nowadays, like with the way the surgeries are. Guys come back from that all the time. And it's not like he's an edge player.
And it's $11.5 million, Adam.
Still a deal.
He's the fourth highest paid player on the team right now, under contract.
Sure. But I mean, it's already
factored in. I'm not saying that Joey Hunt would be the starter next season. I'm going into the season thinking that Ethan Posick can come off the offseason, be healthy, and potentially fill in that spot. And then you have Joey Hunt as a backup that you know that you could get by.
Even when Ethan Posick was healthy, he couldn't compete with anybody on that offensive line. Just kept getting demoted further and further and further.
So you're ready to be done with Posick?
It's not my choice. They've already made it.
Well, he'll be back next year.
To ride the pine.
I'm curious to see which one of us is going to be right, because we're on completely different sides of this issue.
Yes. Well, if you want to be a smash mouth running team, you need a guy in the middle of the offensive line, the guy running the pivot that can push people around. And that's Justin Britt. A guy who recognizes defensive fronts. That's Justin Britt. A guy who has great chemistry with your quarterback. That's Justin Britt. And it's not like you're going to be paying him $10-11 million is not an insane amount of money for an offensive lineman these days. DJ Humphreys just got $1 zillion for being catfish.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Cardinals.
You know, another guy, though, that did pop off the list here for defensive linemen that I found to be interesting was Leonard Williams of the Jets.
Oh, sure.
Only 27, a guy who had a pretty dominant first couple of years. Play has kind of slacked off, you know, former high pick in the draft. These are exactly the dudes that John Schneider goes after. You're going to get him for a prove it deal. And he's a hell of a player.
Yeah. Why haven't we heard much about Leonard Williams? Well, I guess if you're looking at him as a defensive tackle, right? Because that's,
yes.
You're kind of looking at, there are so many of those guys who play defensive tackle, whether it's Gerald McCoy and Dominican Sue. I mean, you can go down the list and Leonard Williams is on it. And yeah, that's why I feel like Jaron Reed has to be gone, right? Because there are so many guys that you can kind of bring in and get similar production and not have to pay for all that potential upside. I think Jaron Reed's probably either going to end up back with the Seahawks on a prove it type 1 year deal, or some team's going to pay him, you know, what he wants, upwards of $14-15 million a year.
Right. And then we're going to bring in one of these other guys on a prove it type of deal. I mean, that'll be that revolving door there.
Right.
I don't think there's any way you pay Jaron Reed that $10-12 million a year salary. Yeah. I just don't see that.
Well, the other spot that the Seahawks were kind of talking about this past episode was what they could do at wide receiver. And I hear so many names thrown out, like AJ Green, Emmanuel Sanders, Amari Cooper, all those guys too expensive. You aren't going to bring in somebody that you're going to pay more. I don't think you're going to have anybody getting more money than Tyler Lockett, who's the number fifth paid player overall on the team next season, $11.3 million. I think it's going to have to come in under that. And so I think we're thinking, you know, another Jets player, Robbie Anderson, he might actually top that $11 million number. I know he's not like a big name guy, but I think he could be a guy that a lot of teams look to and say, hey, here, you know, a lot of yards after the catch, or, you know, yards per attempt. He has a pretty high number there. I think he might even be too much. You look at guys like Devin Funchess, Paul Richardson, guys who just can't stay healthy. I don't know if you saw it, but Paul Richardson released by the Skins, you know, 2 years into his big $5 million deal. I see a lot of people saying, oh, he should come back to Seattle. Yeah. Did you remember how much we complained about his injury issues? We want a dude who can stay on the field and actually contribute.
Absolutely. One thing I find interesting about this wide receiver conversation is everybody's talking about guys who primarily play on the outside, outside the numbers.
Sure.
And why are we looking for a dude out there?
Yeah, we have the two dudes that play out there.
Right. I'm looking for a slot guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking for that Danny Amendola type, that Wes Welker type, you know, that sort of guy. A Julian Edelman type, you know, a white slot receiver.
it doesn't have to be a white guy.
I know. It's just funny because
Most of them are.
As those names started to roll off the tongue, like,
you're like,
oh, like,
my gosh, all these guys are white guys.
Yeah, exactly. No, so just it struck me as funny. But
you got Breshad Perryman of Tampa
outside
Bay.
Outside player.
I guess he plays outside. Philip Dorsett for New England.
Outside. No, thank you. I'm Philip Dorsett.
Randall Cobb's
legs fell off 2 years ago. I think the answer to this problem is already on the roster.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Ursua.
The guy who caught one pass this last season?
As a seventh round rookie wide receiver pick? Yes.
Yeah.
The fact he got in a game at all is a freaking Christmas miracle. The fact that he's stuck on the roster is a Christmas miracle. Like, I do think he has that sort of skill set, that shifty in and out game, option routes. You don't have to be a huge dude to do that stuff. All you have to do is have great chemistry with your quarterback. He's a smart guy. He just needs to put in some work with Russ in the offseason.
Yeah.
I think he's already on the roster.
Well, and when you talk about the idea of Greg Olsen now being a target for Russell Wilson, Will Dissly coming back, who was the number three guy mm-hmm. for Russell Wilson before he got hurt. If DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett are your 1 and 2, Will Dissly and Greg Olsen are your 3 and 4. Now we're arguing about the slot guy getting the fifth most targets out of everybody. Right. And who cares about the number five guy? You don't pay for that.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, until you've got Malik Turner trying to make a clutch catch as you're coming back against the Green Bay Packers in your final game of the season, then you start to care about that fifth guy a little bit.
Ursua's one catch. It was a clutch one.
Exactly.
And he almost got a touchdown.
You can make fun of me as much as you want, but you draft guys for a reason.
Oh, I understand. And there's probably that guy out there. And it's a guy that they're probably not going to have to pay upwards of $7 million for.
Especially with Russ. Like, that's a place where you can bring in just about anybody as long as they can catch. And he'll make them better. That's what Russell Wilson does. He's done it his whole career. He's that kind of quarterback.
Where did Seth Roberts play for Baltimore? Is he an outside guy?
I think he was. I don't honestly remember.
He was on my list too.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Robinson for KC.
Sure. I mean, they can't keep everybody after a Super Bowl run.
No.
Yeah, I have no interest in Devin Funchess. I saw that article and, well, there's the big bodied receiver for the Seahawks. No, it isn't. I have one. His name's right. DK.
Yeah, we found him last year.
Yeah, we have him now. I don't need broken down, slow ass Devin Funchess for that.
You can have more big-bodied guys, though, too. But, yeah, Devin Funchess, I mean, he got $10 million for 1 year from the Colts and then was injured all season.
Right.
How much more is he going to get this offseason to, in another prove-it type deal, because he couldn't prove it last year? I don't know, maybe.
I just would rather those low- to mid-tier free agent contracts that you kind of throw around, those ones that at the end of the year people look at and they go, either, we knew he was, you know, washed up, so it didn't really matter. We tried to throw $5 million at him. Or at the end of the year, you go, man, that was a sneaky good signing. Who knew? Like, how did the whole league not know that he had that much left in the tank? And what a savvy signing, right? It goes one way or the other. If you're doling out those contracts, I'd rather dole those out to defensive linemen.
Or offensive linemen.
Maybe. Still going back to last year, I mean, short of injuries, I'm not sure offensive line was the biggest problem on this team.
Not the biggest problem. No, the biggest problem was defensive line.
Yes, absolutely.
We've established that for sure.
Right.
And I've seen
articles, you know, people throwing out the idea of maybe trading for Slay in Detroit.
Oh, here it is. Yeah, Mario Cristani came in through our Ring of Honor group. Says, seeing a lot of articles and buzz about the possibility of doing a trade and sign with Detroit for Darius Slay. I don't know how realistic this is, but I can't help but feel lukewarm about even the idea. One, it would be expensive. He's a top 10, maybe even top 5 corner, and he deserves to be paid like one. I don't think we need to be investing a lot of money in the secondary, especially since Shaquille Griffin is due for an extension soon. An expensive D-line, whether that's cap space or draft capital, makes a good secondary. Look at San Francisco. Number two, Trey Flowers is probably going to have a bounce back year and perform at or better than his rookie season. Seattle's corners in particular seem to have a rough sophomore season. I think he will be a quality corner still on a cheap rookie deal. Three, Russell is king, but he's expensive. We need to start maximizing rookie contracts and cheap veteran deals. It doesn't seem prudent to burn draft capital, regardless of the gamble that is the draft, and cap space to get a player that's not an immediate need. Four, there are three good and great players already in the secondary, with two promising rookies in the wings. I don't think they need a fourth. Does anyone else think there is some strong points to why the Hawks should go after him?
Yeah, I'm with Mario 100% here. Just with the idea that Shaq is a number one corner in this league, there's no doubt. Trey Flowers should have his bounce back year. I mean, that's been the pattern, as he points out.
We're counting on it, but there's a chance that it might not happen.
Okay.
Bring in a guy to compete with him through the draft.
All right. So he didn't have a great year this year. Was he a dumpster fire out there?
No, he was fine. Yeah, I mean, he was
fine.
He was okay.
Exactly. Like, even if he's just okay.
Right.
You're still okay. And the other thing is that then he brought in Amadi to play the slot, and I thought he did very well throughout the year when they finally started to lean on him to play that position. And it, when you look at the history of the franchise, out of all the places that you don't spend money because you develop well, it's corner. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't see any reason to pay a top tier corner. And especially in this league overall, we're starting to see that paying big money for a number one corner doesn't really work out. Where you need to spend your money in the secondary in this day and age is at safety. That's where the more important position is. That quarterback of the defense, in a sense, or at least the secondary.
Yeah.
And guys that can go up and they play the run, as they're a de facto, you know, fourth linebacker. If you got three linebackers out there, you know, he's an extra linebacker, and he's also an extra DB. That's where the efficiency is in paying a guy at safety. Now they bang up their bodies a little quicker. But yeah, I'd much rather pay safety than corner. I don't see a reason to pay top tier money to a corner these days.
Yeah, especially with Griffin coming up on his deal. You want to keep around your own guys. Kind of Pete Carroll's always been that guy who wants to highlight guys who come up through the system as opposed to going out and getting and paying for dudes. And yeah, paying for a corner, it makes so little sense to me. And yeah, that idea being out there is every time in the offseason, Seattle's one either drafting corners in the first or second round and picking up these big name cornerbacks who, and it never happens. The one time I think that they actually did pay for a corner, and it wasn't, you know, a top corner, but it was the dude from Baltimore, right? And he was a dumpster fire.
Oh, the guy from the Eagles?
Oh, it was the Eagles, yeah.
Oh, God, why am I blanking on his name? My God, yeah, he was a dumpster fire for 1 year.
He didn't even finish the year.
Why can't I think of this guy's name?
Kerry Williams.
There we go. Jesus.
Yeah, he played for the Ravens.
Oh, did he? Okay.
But and also the Eagles. And also
okay,
the Titans.
Okay, so we were both right. That's cool. Oh, I didn't realize he had played for the Titans too. Yeah, I just don't think that corner makes a lot of sense overall in the structure that is the league today. And then especially for a team like the Seahawks who draft and develop corners well.
All right, Adam. Well, what do you say we take a quick break, we come back, and we talk a little bit more about Russell Wilson's hair. We talk about a little bit of XFL.
All right, that works for me. I did watch some.
All right. Getting back into it after the break. Hey, we got through the break, and there wasn't an ad for KY. That's a plus.
Oh, has that been a problem?
Apparently, on the other show that I do, on the Field Goals Pod, you know, they put ads in the show.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know what
you
goes
have no
in
control.
There.
No.
I don't listen back to it after I publish it. You know, I record the show and put it out. And so I have to hear from our listeners in the flock that to tell me what the ads were. And I found out that there was a KY ad, apparently, in one of the recent ones.
See, when you start having ads in the show, it's a slippery slope.
Right. We don't have to worry about that because we are listener funded. Gettingtheflock.com. We've had a lot of people dropping off because of the off season, but you know, you and I are here. We're going to keep doing this.
We are.
And not maybe at the weekly pace, but we will be here.
Right. And who knows? We may get back to weekly for a little bit and maybe not. I don't know. It's just all going to depend.
It depends on how we feel.
Right. Like today, I was super fired up.
Yeah.
I was super fired up to talk about the team after thinking about this offseason and the potential of the next couple years. And just the idea that, you know, the last 2 years, I think both that you and I were kind of like, if we can compete, that would be great. And, you know, make the playoffs and that'd be fine. And, you know, that's kind of our expectation. And I'm looking at these next 2-3 years after the two building years, yeah, rebuilding years. And the time is now. I expect this team to compete for titles the next 2-3 years with Russell Wilson at the peak of his powers. Like, now's the time. The indictment on John and Pete will be written after these next 2-3 years.
They're out from underneath the Legion of Boom era. All those contracts, you know, even the Cam Chancellor contract now is off the books. Now they have to find a way to at least build a competent defense. And like we said, it could go either way. They could look to build a really strong defense, or they could look to spend the money on the offense and really build around Russell Wilson, which I think you could decide to do it either way, because Russell Wilson is a guy who gives you some, you know, help with escapability, and mm-hmm. But protecting him wouldn't be the worst thing either. So it's definitely a curious thing. And I like what you're saying too, because this is the time where you look at and you say, yes, if the Seahawks don't get a title now in the next 3 years, then you are wasting Russell Wilson's prime.
Because it is here. It is upon us. And you look at the history, too, of these quarterbacks and their Super Bowl windows, right? And most of the really great ones we've talked about, mentioned earlier, you know, they get two. Brady and the Patriots have had three. And maybe there's another quarterback out there that I'm not thinking of that had, you know, kind of a third rebirth and a third title run in them. But usually the first one is defensive centric, run the ball, make a couple splash plays. And then the second one is more offensive centric and, you know, revolves around the best player on the team. I mean, that was Brady's second run. Now his third run, it went back to, all right, defense, run the ball, just make a couple great plays because he's older, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you need a lot more off of your defensive side of the football.
Right.
So, yeah, it kind of feels like if Pete and John follow history, this next iteration would be more offensive centric.
It does feel that way. I'm curious, though, because of the mindset of Pete Carroll being a defensive coach, is he going to be that guy who makes that shift mentally? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, Drew Brees is another good example, right? Like, he didn't really get a first act because he was in San Diego.
Yeah.
And he hurt his shoulder. And then he gets to the Saints on, you know, what was more or less his second act. And that was all offense, fireworks, Drew Brees, right?
Yeah.
And then now you see this team the last couple of years who have absolutely been in contention to win a title. I mean, one of the favorites, right?
But they've shifted more toward the running game. They've shifted more toward defense. Now, having Michael Thomas doesn't hurt either. But it's definitely not a downfield type attack.
Right. I mean, Brady had Gronk on in his last, you know, couple years winning titles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you still have weapons around you.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not pushing the ball downfield like Russ does now.
Well, one guy who I feel like they are going to waste his years at quarterback in Seattle is Brandon Silvers. Look at that XFL Dragons defense for Seattle. And then behind center, Brandon Silvers.
Yeah, he can go away anytime. He can go away anytime. Why aren't we playing BJ Daniels?
I don't know.
And yes, I say we because I'm now a Sea Dragons fan. I watched that last game in the hotel room in Hood River with Jared, and I was all in. I got sucked right in.
It's a good thing that you were not there for the first half, because you would have turned the game off, I think, by the second half. And the second half was far more exciting. And I mean, the interception for the touchdown at like the 1 yard line, that was a fun play. And but there's got to be some more offense. And I don't know if there's something that the XFL can do to give more of an advantage to the QBs. They've already allowed the wide receivers to be college rules and only have to get 1 foot down. But they have to do something, because the quarterbacks, man, I don't understand. How can the CFL get by with pretty good quarterback play? They throw the ball all over the yard in the CFL. In college, you have plenty of quarterbacks that do enough things. Now, I guess there isn't the defensive talent that's consolidated like there is on a potential XFL squad. So, yeah, it's weird to me. Why can't you find a decent quarterback?
It has been a little surprising how poor overall the quarterback play is. But, I mean, you look at Walker in Houston. I mean, he's playing lights out. And I remember watching him a couple years ago in the preseason being like, wow, okay.
Cardale Jones has looked okay. But a guy like Landry Jones, who you would expect, like, here's a guy who was filling in as a starter. He should be able to come down and carve up these XFL teams.
I've never been impressed with Landry Jones, so that one doesn't surprise me.
Well,
it's like being surprised that Christian Hackenberg didn't make it in the AAF, right?
I guess.
It's like, oh, yeah, no, you suck balls. And, like, same thing with Cook.
Well, what about Josh Johnson, though? A guy who has been a journeyman and is pretty decent?
Like, he was supposed to be the starter in L.A. What happened?
I think he was starting. He just hasn't been that great.
He didn't play in the first game.
Oh, he did play this weekend. He played against the...
Oh, did he?
He was in the Dallas game, right?
Was I don't know.
In Dallas?
I didn't see that one.
Yeah. He was out there.
Yeah, Josh Johnson, I don't know. I mean, he's always kind of been just a dude.
I know, but a guy who is just a dude in the NFL should be able to tear up like a minor league type system.
You know, it's interesting you say that because you think about the quarterback play in the XFL, and you're like, it should be better. And there's got to be guys available that are better, right? And there are. But I don't think they want to play there. My example would be, I read a long feature that was done on Brock Osweiler this last couple months.
Yeah.
And, you know, where he's at in life and what all happened, you know, when he left Denver, what happened in Houston, and, you know, everything kind of, you know, and the way his career, you know, progressed or regressed, however you want to put it, in the NFL. And it was very insightful. It was very interesting. And, you know, towards the end, you know, sure, he'd take another shot in the NFL if given it. And I think, honestly, he deserves one. I really do. Hmm. He's not nearly as bad as people say. But, you know, they asked him a bit about the XFL. And he's like, man, if I'm going to be taking hits, like, I'm not doing it in the XFL.
Yeah.
It's not worth it to me. And I think that's where it's at. I think Brock would light that league on fire.
Well, if any quarterback didn't have to worry about taking hits, I think we would get more impressive quarterback play.
No. I mean, even if Brock was taking hits in the XFL, if he was willing to do it.
Well, and yeah, I'm sure he'd be willing to do it if they'd be willing to pay him. But the XFL isn't willing to pay guys at the quarterback spot that I think would command it. I mean, they could get a guy like Johnny Manziel, who was really successful in college and, you know, could be... He's just a name now.
He could at least be interesting, though. No, he can't. He wasn't even interesting in the CFL. He sucked.
I think it would be an interesting name that it would at least get you tuned in, though.
I mean, I think back to preseasons past, and who was that kid for the Vikings? It was like Slaughter or Slaughter or something like that. It wore like one. Yeah. Like, that guy, I think, would perform well in the XFL. Where's he?
I think he's on a third-string NFL roster or in the practice squad somewhere. So, I mean, that's how far down you are on the depth chart of the NFL to get guys that, you know, if they can't make a third string quarterback spot, they're looking at the XFL.
Right. And what's weird is that, I mean, I guess it's not weird because it's the first year and all these leagues have gone belly up in a year anyway, but all these third stringers look at being the backup's backup as a better gig than the starter in the XFL.
Sure.
That doesn't compute.
And well, I suppose give it a couple of years and maybe if it turns into something that can be developmental, there might be guys who decide after 1 year in college that they go, oh, hey, I can go play in the XFL and play 2 years there and then enter the NFL draft.
I'm just surprised, getting back to the Sea Dragons, which I've noticed that everybody just drops the C and just says Dragons. So I wonder how long it takes before it's just the Seattle Dragons.
It is the Seattle Dragons.
I thought it was the Sea Dragons.
No, that's just what you call them.
Oh, well, there we go. My Sea Dragons. But yeah, so with the Dragons there is, I don't understand for the life of me why BJ Daniels isn't starting. Well, I mean, what throws is Silvers making that keeps him in the number one spot that BJ can't make? And on top of that, BJ can freaking run.
Brandon Silvers is a pocket passer, and they don't have a clean pocket, so you need a guy who can move around.
Even when he is in the pocket, he's terrible.
Yeah.
He can't throw it outside the hashes. I don't get it.
He did have the 168-yard touchdown to Keenan Reynolds, who's the best player on the Dragons.
Yeah, well, cool. I could have completed that pass.
Exactly. Keenan Reynolds probably could have thrown that pass to himself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you made a funny point while I was watching the game. You're like, yeah, put Keenan Reynolds in there. Run the triple option. You'd probably dominate.
I bet they would.
Yeah.
I want to see what these teams could do. I don't think Jordan's a triple option guy, though. So,
well, then become one.
Yeah. Bring in an advisor from the Army or Navy and learn to run the triple option.
What? You can't learn that in a weekend as a head coach? As Jim Zorn, a guy who's been around football his entire life? You can't learn the triple option?
Yeah.
There's three options. That's it. Like, figure it out.
I do like, there are some things that I do like about the XFL, though.
Yeah, okay. So what about the XFL do you like? What, any of the rules or anything in particular?
I like hearing the refs conference over the penalties.
I do, too.
I do like the fact that you do get some of the coaches mic'd up and you hear what plays they're going to call and you hear the announcers kind of break down and explain, you know, what this call means. That's kind of cool. It's kind of a way to learn, you know, different personnel packages and different, you know, you get some of the nomenclature, I guess. It's interesting. I like the kickoffs. So that's interesting.
Okay. I actually like the kickoffs too.
Yeah.
The only thing I wonder about that is it completely eliminates the onside kick. Like, that's gone now.
I know, but is there a route for a team to get back in it other than trying to go for those three-point PATs? Is there?
I think that's the one, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So it's hard to sneak an extra possession in, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's easy in the NFL right now. I mean, they've basically legislated that out already anyways.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah, it's gone.
But yeah, I like the kickoffs too. I do like the ref conversation. It makes you feel less like your team is being willfully screwed over.
Right.
You know, I mean, at least you, even if you disagree, you can at least hear what they're thinking.
Yeah.
That helps. I liked, I watched the first week that LA Houston game a little bit, and the LA quarterback was just having a, like, an emotional meltdown on the field, basically. Just like way too fired up and just like freaking out. And that was fun to listen to. It was like, wow, okay, that explains where his head's at right now as he's spraying it all over the field.
Yeah, and I heard people saying that they don't like the interviews with the players coming off the field, but I kind of like the idea of, you know, even one of the field goal kickers was interviewed right after he missed a kick. I think that's kind of fun. You get to, I mean, it sucks for the dude, but I like getting to, I think if the XFL is going to have success, we have to get to know some of the players. And I think that's one of the ways that you can actually get to know some of these guys. And in some cases, you get to hear them drop F-bombs and the guy with the dump button misses it.
Right. Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about it in terms of the sideline interviews, letting you get to know the players and their story a little bit better, which is just like you said, what they're going to need to really succeed. I hadn't thought about it like that. But if I was thinking about it in NFL terms, I don't want to see that in an NFL game.
Oh, no, I don't want to see it.
I don't want to hear, well, you know, we just keep taking it a play at a time. And, you know, this week we're just really focused on our game plan and coach really had a great one for us. And, you know, just here we go. I mean, we got them right where we want them. And I'm just fired up right now to be a member of this team.
Matt McGloin was actually benched after his, because he was interviewed coming off the field going into the half and was talking about, oh, we need to change the entire game plan in the second half. And he sounded kind of critical about how his team was performing. And he ended up on the bench. I'd like that they're giving guys this opportunity, but it probably means that guys are going to be, you know, give more of the ho-hum answers.
Yeah, he got Joe Flacco'd. You remember last year when Joe Flacco came out and was like, what are we doing on offense? Yada, yada, yada. And then all of a sudden his neck was hurt and he didn't play the rest of the year. Yeah.
Yep. McGloin got Flacco'd.
Oh, nobody wants to get Flacco'd.
Yeah, the PAT is a little interesting. I wish more teams would go for two and three rather than going for one from the 2 yard line.
I don't. So as far as strategy goes, it makes zero sense to me to not go for the two every time over one.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to
go two more yards,
it's 2 more yards and it gives you more space. It gives you more options. I mean, a run play is still perfectly viable from there.
Yeah.
And it actually gives you more space to work with to actually throw a pass.
Right. Yeah, because from 4 yards out, a team has to play both the run and the pass. And I feel like from the two, most of them are playing for the run.
You just run goal line. Yeah, you just throw your goal line defense out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'd go for two every time unless I was in desperation mode and then, you know, trying for three. I'd like to see some more three-point attempts just to see you know, how exciting that makes a game.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it seems like they miss a lot of the point after attempts anyway.
Right. So who is your favorite dragon?
Oh, Keenan Reynolds, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it just because we talked to him once?
Maybe. Okay. The other dude that I like is 34 on the defense.
Yeah, I don't know 34.
I don't know. He's a DB. He's kind of a big hitter.
Okay.
Jeremy Clark.
Right on. I didn't notice him in the last game, but, you know, I don't know. He's probably good. You know who my favorite player on the team is, Brandon?
Who's that?
BJ Daniels.
You know who my real favorite player is?
Hmm.
Kasem Williams.
Yeah, probably.
Who's not even... How can he not get a start? Like, he was a scratch, a healthy scratch from the game.
Is he just an ass?
Catfish!
I guess.
I mean, that's the only thing I can figure. Like, he's shown when he's played for the Seahawks in the preseason, like, that dude has talent.
Yeah.
Like, and yet just gets pushed all the way down the roster. Like, guys like Malik Turner are beating him out on a roster in the NFL. And now he can't even start in the XFL.
Like, with big names like John Santiago and Sergio Bailey and Alonzo Moore and Dontez Byrd. He can't beat out those guys?
I don't know. There's got to be a reason of some kind.
It's baffling to me.
It is baffling.
Free Kaysen. Or Karen.
Look, yeah, I was going to say, Karen's riding the pine, man. That's where he belongs, apparently.
Well, I'll keep watching for a little while.
How interested are you in Tom Brady watch, by the way?
I'm intrigued by it, but I feel like it's not going to impact us much unless he goes to San Francisco.
Do you think that's a legit possibility at all?
I would say it's like a 2% possibility.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
even though
I feel like 90% chance he just goes back to the Patriots.
Oh, I don't think it's that high.
No.
I think it's like 60% he goes back to the Patriots.
Hmm. Okay. It's weird to me that he's bringing everybody to one location, though, or that he's talking about it rather than visiting each team individually.
Why is that weird? He's just pulling a power play. He's Tom Brady.
I know, but don't you want to go see like the atmosphere of the facility? And
what, he hasn't been to every stadium?
He's been to every stadium, but not where the facilities are, where they practice.
I mean, it's only a year or two. What does he care?
I don't know. He doesn't want to go to some dump.
I don't know that there's a lot of dumpy facilities in the NFL, the multi-billion-dollar operation.
I don't know. I haven't been to Detroit's practice facility.
Ford Field's pretty nice.
Where do they practice, though?
I'm sure it's not a total disaster.
Where does he go to work most of
I'm
the
sure
time,
not
just on Sunday?
Gym. Yeah, like, I'm sure it's a legit training facility. I think probably the one you would wonder the most about would be Cincinnati, right? Just because they're so cheap.
Oh, he's not going to Cincinnati.
Well, there you go. Like, all the rest of them are going
to
be
fine.
We
don't even know if the number one pick in the NFL draft is going to go to Cincinnati.
That is such an overhyped story.
I don't know. I think it's perfectly hyped.
Really?
Yeah. He's the Burrow's working with Carson Palmer's brother. And Palmer was the guy who was like publicly came out and said, oh, yeah, you don't want to go to the Bengals.
Yeah, I know. But Marvin Lewis isn't there anymore.
I don't think it matters. I think it's the owners.
Eh.
They don't. Carson Palmer, like he was saying, the Bengals don't care about winning.
Maybe true, maybe not, I guess. I don't know. I'd be surprised. Here's the deal. Joe Burrow doesn't have John Elway / Eli Manning type of leverage here. He's not that guy.
No, maybe not.
I mean, he's a good prospect. Don't get me wrong. If I had the number one pick and I needed a quarterback.
Yeah.
I would. He'd be my guy. Yeah. I think out of those quarterbacks.
He's an Ohio guy. I know it makes a lot of sense.
But he's not a Andrew Luck, John Elway type prospect, and he doesn't have the Manning, you know, apparatus around him like Eli did to force his way out of San Diego. He doesn't have that.
And one of the things that I have heard, though, with the Bengals being kind of a cheap team, if he were to just opt out and say, I'm not showing up, I'll go back into the draft next year. Then the Bengals would be like, oh, great. We don't have to pay $36 million to a dude this year, and we can make that much more money.
Right. And then maybe we'll have the number one pick again next year and go ahead and try to draft you again.
Right.
How long do you want to do this, Joe?
Well, you can only do it for 2 years, and then you're a free agent. But
yeah,
I think passing up $36 to $40 million check back to back years would be pretty tough.
Well, I mean, right now, if you're Joe Burrow, this is the hottest your stock will ever be.
Oh, yeah.
Why on earth would you go back to school under any circumstance?
Oh, no. Yeah. I think the only play is to hopefully make it sound like the Dolphins would be better off trading up to get you. If you don't want to go to Cincy.
Sure. I mean, I could see him in Miami. That makes a lot of sense.
They got 3 first round picks.
Yeah. And, you know, Flores has that thing kind of going the right direction. I don't know. Maybe they want to run another year with Fitzmagic and, you know, stock up the rest of the roster a little bit more and then draft that quarterback.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I wouldn't trade away a crap ton of first round picks, though, for Burrow. Like, he's one of those guys, if I had one of those high picks and he was there to take, I would definitely take him. Is he somebody that you, like the Eagles did with Carson Wentz, and give away the farm to go get? I don't think so. His downfield throws are, they're fine, but they're not, wow. Like, he doesn't have that extra level of arm talent.
Like, he's going to be the first pick, but he's not in that same level where you know the guy is the first pick.
Well, I mean, out of these guys, this quarterback class, yeah, he's the first pick. But
I mean, the first guy any year.
Right. Yeah, he's not that slam dunk, you know, Andrew Luck. Like I said, Andrew Luck, John Elway type talent, right? Where you just look at him and you go, oh, my God, okay.
He should be good, though.
Yeah, I think he will. Yeah.
All right. Well, some people who think the show is good. And aside from the people who go to getintheflonk.com and support us there, some people leave us reviews. Like Kilo Ico 07 says, longtime listener. I've been a longtime listener and subscriber. Love the podcast. Entertaining, informative, and true to the Hawks. The podcast allows military flockers to take the game on deployment with them. Stay connected to the Hawks from across the world with Adam and Brandon. Great work, gentlemen. Go Hawks.
Hey, man. Go Hawks. And appreciate that review. I mean, that was one of the things that kind of motivated us to do this in the first place. I mean, especially coming from you, Brandon.
Yeah.
Is, you know, yeah, helping out those folks in the service and maybe giving them one extra avenue to listen to what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, like when you're on the ship and you can't necessarily watch the games always, but, you know, pull into port and can download shows, or gosh, maybe people can even download the shows while they're on the ship now. I don't know what the internet connection speed has improved to since the time that I left.
Oh, it's got to, right? Like, I'd be surprised if they couldn't.
Who knows? But I do enjoy getting those types of reviews. And another one here says, best Seahawks hands down, from NJ Hawks fan. Says, these guys are great. Best pod for Seahawks fans. Keep up the good work, gents. And catfish! The 49ers.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And yeah, it's funny. I mean, depending on the year, it's, you know, either catfish the Rams or catfish the Niners. Maybe we got to come up with a phrase that envelops the Cardinals, Rams, and Niners all at once.
Sure.
Yeah.
Catfish the NFC West teams that aren't the Seahawks.
Yeah, it just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
That was the best I could do on short notice.
Yeah, I'm saying that we got to think on this. Maybe the listeners can help.
Yeah, we need a term for the non-Seahawks teams.
Right.
All right, something to think about.
Something to think about.
Go Hawks at SeahawkersPodcast.com. Email in. All right, Adam, what do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
All right. Well, I think do better. I feel united on this front with you, to be honest.
There is a clear do better from this past week, and I knew it when I saw it, that you would be on board with it, that I would be on board with it, and there's probably a lot of Seahawks fans that are on board with this too, because CenturyLink put out a press release, mm-hmm. and it almost seemed to brag about this a little bit, but saying that CenturyLink is going cashless, as this is some kind of great feat that is, you know, just... It's all about the customer service, and this is just going to allow them to provide that much better customer service by going cashless at CenturyLink Field.
It is catfishing absurd. Like, this is one of my biggest pet peeves in life. The idea that you don't accept the legal tender of the United States of America for a product or a service. Like, actual money. It's literal money. It's not, I mean, it's something you hold in your hand, and it's worth what it says on the front, as long as we all agree that the dollar is held up by oil. That's fine. But like, it is what is money? Like that, it's that.
Yeah.
And you won't take the actual money. All you'll take is this pie in the sky freaking ones and zeros all done up in a computer somewhere that can all be wiped out in an instant. That's the, quote, money that you'll take. What's next? Are we all going to pay in catfish Bitcoin when we're at the clink? This is so stupid. You have to take real money if you're a business.
But it's so much faster if everybody just gives people their card and swipes. Because, you know, when I see the beer vendor walking up the ramp, I always give him my card. No, you give him cash. You hand him cash. He hands you the beer. And what are you going to do about these guys with their tip money? They're going to lose out on all kinds of tip money. I feel bad for the beer vendors that have to. And then they're going to have to carry around a thing that you have to swipe their card. Those guys deal exclusively in cash all the time. And that's the way it should be.
Okay, couple things here. Number one, I heard the argument, it's faster. Bull.
Catfish!
Let me tell you why. I'm in my seat, I'm halfway down the row. Beer vendor comes walking up the aisle, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to conduct a transaction. I say, hey, beer guy, give me more beer because I want to be drunker. And he goes, cool, hand me some money. I'm like, all right. So in scenario one, I take a $20 bill out of my pocket and it gets passed down to the beer vendor.
Right.
He does some change, puts it with the beer, hands the beer and the change to everybody. It gets passed back down. So it's one pass up, one pass down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Scenario two. Hey, beer guy, I want to get drunker. Cool. I pass down my card. He swipes it, puts it with the can, passes it back down to me. One pass up, one pass back. How's that faster?
Yeah, it's the same amount of passes.
It's the same amount of passes. And if you're like, well, he's got to count out the change. What, it takes a guy 45 minutes to count change when we're dealing in whole numbers?
They're always dealing in whole numbers at the game. It's not hard to count change. People aren't bringing change to a game. And this is the other thing that bothers me, is that in the press release about going cashless, they're like, oh, but there's an option for people who bring cash to the game. You can stand and wait in line at a machine to put your cash in to give you a card. So then you can go stand in the other line where the food is that you can give your card away. So if you bring cash to a game, now you're standing in two lines. That line for the cash machine is going to be long. The food lines are going to be just as long as they are normally. Now you're standing in two lines. And you're probably just going to decide, screw it. I don't need to eat. I don't need to drink. I'll do it after the game.
This is the scam. So you take real money and you turn it into fake money that you then have on this card. And let's say you put $40 on the card and then you end up spending $37.
Right.
Now what? Well, I'm curious
if those cards are exclusive to the stadium or
I'm
if they're
sure they are.
Just like a Visa card that you can use anywhere.
Even still, let's say they're viable everywhere, right? You're going to use the majority of the money on the card. You'll be $5-6 left, right? How many people are going to put that in their wallet or their purse, whatever,
and
remember that they've got $5-6 randomly to spend on their Clink card that they had and just forget about it? And I don't know what the statute of limitations on that crap is, but I guarantee you at some point those accounts are closed out and suddenly somebody has $5-6 more. Yeah,
yeah. There's a fake money for a carrying fee or something that if you don't use it within 6 months, that you start getting charged.
There you go. And it'll be something along those lines.
I've seen the small print on those.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be some bull crap that like actually extracts more money from the fan. This is all a scam, dude. I hate it. I hate the concept so much that I know on the podcast I yell a lot, but in real life, am I a yeller?
You're not really a yeller in real life.
No.
Except with things like this.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't yell at customer service people. Like, they're just trying to do their job. Like, I don't get really upset with them. That's not my style at all. It might be surprising some people, but it's not. Here's the thing. The one time that I've literally made a customer service person cry was at a hotel in Mount Vernon, Washington, because we got there, the card that my dad had already reserved the room on, before we got there, she wouldn't run because he hadn't signed some stupid release form. And it's just ridiculous. I didn't have a credit card at the time. This is 6-7 years ago, but I brought cash with me. So she's like, well, I can't do the card, blah, blah, blah. It's 2 in the morning. We've been driving all night. And she's like, well, we can call him and he can sign the form now. It's like, it's 2 a.m. You think he sleeps next to a catfish fax machine? Give me a break. No, he does not. And so I was like, all right, fine. We'll just pay cash. Well, I can't accept cash. What do you mean you can't accept cash? Well, how would we know that we're going to get paid? Because I'm giving you money. Like actual money. What do you mean? You don't know that you're going to get paid.
This is the money that I'm paying you.
The United States of America. And I made her cry. Jared's howling in the corner. She eventually took the cash.
I hope so.
Yeah. It's just the stupidity of it that somehow. And you know what? This is the slippery slope thing. You know what's next? We're all going to have to walk around with a chip on our hand and we'll like function on some sort of demerit system.
Oh, it'll
and
be it's so much faster.
The mark of the
it'll
beast.
Be so much faster, Adam, when we just have the chip in our finger.
Yeah, exactly.
When we have to do the retinal scans to get our food, that'll be so much faster.
What could go wrong?
I don't know. Watch Demolition Man.
Exactly. Yeah. So for this next step towards the end of humanity, CenturyLink Field, do better.
Better. I don't want Simon poking out my eye with a pen so he can get a free hot dog.
Right?
I don't want it.
Yeah. Think about all the eyeball snatching that would go on.
It's going to be an epidemic. That's right. The slippery slope.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the every dystopian future, right? That you look at. That's the deal. Like all of a sudden your money's totally controlled by some being in the sky, you know, that can just instantly turn it on and off. Oh, nope. You've got no more money anymore, even though you did.
Yeah.
That's gone now. It's all fake.
There's 8 lines at each vendor. Why can't you just, you know, if they think it is going to be so much faster, if people want to stand in a cash only line versus a card only line, makes some different lines. But yeah, this is weird to me.
You everybody who does a card transaction, like you do the card, you got to sit there and wait for it to process, put in your PIN, wait for it to process some more, then take your card out. You're telling me that's faster than being like, here's $20. Here's $3 back. See ya.
That's why they do the whole numbers at the game. To make it faster, right?
It's unreal.
Well, on to better at life.
Yeah.
My better at life this week. This goes back to after the Super Bowl. I'm giving my better at life nod to Derek Nnadi of the Chiefs. Big number 91. A guy that I really wanted the Seahawks to draft back in 2018, but he was selected right before the Seahawks picked at 76. They ended up taking a trade and trading back, and the Chiefs got Nnadi. The Seahawks ultimately got Rasheem Green. But the reason for the better at life nod, all season, Nnadi has been covering the adoption fees for a dog for every time the Chiefs win this past season.
Oh.
And after the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, KC Pet Project, which is a no-kill shelter in Kansas City, they announced that Derek was paying the adoption fees for every adoptable dog at the shelter. And that's not a small amount. The adoption fees are usually around $150. You know, the centers have to stay open. They have to pay employees. They have to feed the dogs. Mm-hmm. There's money that's associated with all that, giving them a shots. So on top of that, he's been encouraging people to make pledges to donate for every tackle that he's made this season, with the proceeds going to the Boys and Girls Clubs of the greater Kansas City area. But one of the cool things about doing the KC Pet Project thing, they were able to adopt out all their dogs at the shelter. So no animals left. They adopted them all out because of Derek Nnadi offering to pick up the pet adoption fees. So for his charitable efforts in the Kansas City community, you know, he's also done some charity efforts in his hometown area of Virginia Beach. Derek Nnadi, better at life than Skip Bayless.
That's a cool story. I mean, really, as having, you know, well, former connections with the Humane Society, with my ex-wife being heavily involved still with the Humane Society, and, you know, somebody that runs the Missoula Humane Society, it's amazing that somebody would take an interest in the adoption of pets and, you know, rescuing animals, because there's so many of them that do deserve a great home. And, you know, the one thing that maybe stands between them and a lot of love is somebody that doesn't have an extra $150.
Right. Yeah.
And that's super cool, man.
It is very cool. And it was cool to see that story get publicized so much. And so maybe some other people will help jump on that too.
Right. All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week. I didn't really have one up until like a few minutes ago. I was kind of racking my brain what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And then I just remembered a text that I got earlier today. And my better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for my daughter, because she's just such a good kid. My daughter is 16 in high school, right?
Yeah.
I get a text this morning. Can I skip fourth period?
Okay.
And I texted her back and I was like, well, I guess. I mean, what are you for what? And
do you have a good reason?
What are you going to do? And she's like, well, I've got this other project I really need to work on. I wanted to go to the library and work on that. So number one, she's skipping class to go do more classwork. That's the idea. To go to the library. That's what she's asking me, number one. Number two, she asked me if she could skip class. How many classes did you skip in high school, Brandon, that you did not ask permission for from your parents?
Oh, yeah, no. And I never asked permission for my parents.
No. So, like, that's an ease of mind there. And then I said, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Do I need to call the school? And she's like, yeah, just so you don't get a phone call later saying that I missed class, I'd be good. And then the next text, like 30 seconds later, is, no, I'll just go to class. It's what I'm supposed to do. Sorry to bug you. So to my daughter for asking me to skip class for a legitimate reason and then making a great decision to still go to class and making my life easy as a parent, my daughter, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I don't know if that counts as skipping class, though, if you're still at school and just doing other work. Like, I would ask to get out of class and then just, you know, like go hang out in the journalism room with other people and just to do something different. Like, I'm still at school. I'm not skipping school. I'm just not in the class that I would normally be in.
Yeah. So we both played this game a little bit in high school. We call it the pub, right? The publications room.
Yeah.
Pub office, right? And then I had my junior and senior year, since I was a photo editor for the newspaper and the yearbook.
Right.
I got what they call a press pass. It was laminated, fit right in my back pocket. And guess what I got to do with that? Anything the hell I wanted. It was great. If I got stopped and I needed a hall pass, if I was coming back to school from lunch late and I, you know, whatever, I just whipped out the press pass, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how many classes I was like, oh no, I was doing yada, yada, yada. And I'd just be hanging out down in the pub with all my friends anyways. Just hanging
out.
It
was the place to hang out at school because that was the one place where you could go that there wasn't any kind of, you know, people were working on things, but it wasn't a classroom type situation to where you could come in and you could just come and go as you please. And yeah, there was no
Mr. Stone would be hanging in his office. And if you needed his help or a question about something, you go and ask him. Otherwise, he was just in his office and he kind of let you do your thing.
Yeah.
It was great.
I was also good enough in my math class that our math teacher would actually excuse us on Taco Tuesday to go get tacos for the rest of the class, and we could and come back and we just catch up on our math homework.
Yeah. Which math teacher was that? I did not have that math teacher.
It wasn't Bradbury. It was what was her name? Can't remember.
Yeah, well, I can see they made a big impression.
I was hardly ever in class.
And
it's always getting tacos.
And Taco Tuesday is one of the most important days of the week, no doubt.
Yeah, and now LeBron is like capitalizing on it.
Yeah, good for him.
20 years later.
Yeah, good crap. Yeah, good for him. He's a good marketing guy. Good job, Bron.
How about that?
There's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.